This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on Apple Podcasts.
Hello, this is Dunty Dum, a podcast about the archers and the goings-on of Ambridge. I'm Jacqueline Berto, who is still not seeing the tactile charm of the hides in the tea room. Oh, thank goodness that's all over.
And I'm Stephen Bowden, who knows a place where we can get mini roast beef and Yorkshire puddings.
And then there's you, our lovely Dumpty Dummers, who are all ready to dress up for Cheltenham. Oh, only to realise it was all over by Friday. That introduction was to celebrate the fact that Dumpty Dum is 10 years old this month. Now, unfortunately, we don't have a recording of the very first Dumpty Dum. The episode number one is actually the fourth episode, so we can't tell you exactly what was in that first one. But we can tell you what was going on in Ambridge in the week ending the 16th of March 2014.
Tom and Kirsty were house hunting while planning for their wedding.
Ooh. David was agreeing to become a flood warden for the Am.
Dan and Fallon were organising a race over an assault course that they were calling the Rough and Tumble Challenge.
Adam and Ian had dinner with Helen and Rob to celebrate Jess agreeing to a divorce.
And Jennifer was planning a new kitchen.
That's amazing, isn't it? All of those stories were, apart from probably the Rough and Tumble Challenge, were prescient to future events.
Yes, Tom and Kirsty planning for that wedding, which didn't go quite according to plan.
No, it certainly didn't. And what about the flood warden then?
This was almost exactly a year before the great flood of Ambridge.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of flooding in the village in the normal way. I think the Rough and Tumble Challenge, Dan was talking about running through Hayden Brook for part of it, which was very muddy. The whole place was muddy.
Yeah. And in fact, I love that episode because, of course, here where I live, we're very much a part of the Tour de France scene. Mur de Bretagne is almost the highest point, a massive climb that in the last twice when they've run here, they've done the mount up to the top of Mur de Bretagne twice. So it's a hell of a climb. And of course, that was the year just before this recording and the planning for the Rough and Tumble Challenge was when Sir Bradley Wiggins won overall. He didn't win here, but because he's not a climber. And so it was very much a part of my personal life then, because of course, I'd done a lot of meeting and greeting when the tour was here. And there he was. They were planning to get him in.
Yes. And then Adam and Ian had dinner with Helen and Rob. And that was, I think, one of the earlier moments when Ian, at least, was noticing how awful Rob was. Adam was still, at this point, in denial about that.
And that's interesting because I think Adam was in denial for quite a long time, wasn't he? Ian was very, for once, he was very astute in his assessment of the situation. And that caused a bit of hassle for Helen, didn't it? Because, of course, Adam's not really her friend. He's her cousin. But Ian was definitely the mate.
Yes, Helen and Ian were very close at that point. That seems to be something that we're hearing less of at the moment. And then, of course, Jennifer's kitchen.
Oh.
We heard all about that this week.
Exactly. I think later on your kitchen gets a mention in this programme, having read the review that we received. So, yes, we were invested in Jennifer's kitchen, weren't we?
Yes, and apparently Miranda was too.
Yeah, damn, maybe. So that was then, but this is now. So welcome to Dumpty Dum, a show about our favourite country village. This week's episodes of The Archers were written by Sarah Hahir. And coming up, we have calls from...
Jen from Brooklyn, who has concerns about both Harrison and Chris.
Marie from Winchester, who is wondering about abattoir vets.
Witherspoon, who has thoughts about business plans.
Claire from Clapham, who is studying gorillas in the mist.
Helen, a first-time caller in Aura, hurrah, who wants to talk about labels.
Emma from Poland, who is unsure about the Kate and Paul dynamic.
And finally, globetrotting Richard, who has advice about getting advice.
We also have an email from Chris in Indiana. Plus, we have The Week in Ambridge by Sui, a roundup of the Dumpty Dum Facebook group from Michelle, hooray, making her debut, and the Tweets of the Week from our lovely Theo. But before we start talking too much, let's remind ourselves of what happened over the last 7 days with a roundup of The Week in Ambridge with Sui.
Hello, my lovelies.
It's Celia, Queen of Tartan Twitches, and it's time for a quick reminder of what happened this week in Ambridge. What a week! Brian qualified for a Father of the Year award by spending time with his children at the races while procrastinating about getting chummy with Miranda. She is, if you don't remember, Justin's ex-wife, who he ditched on Friday to spend more time with Alice. I was looking forward to him returning to the Brian of old, and frankly, anything which annoyed Justin would be well worth it. Justin was asked for advice from Emma on the tree surgery business after Brian gave William the benefit of his wisdom for nout. Justin wanted payment and settled on some free surgery once they have qualified. George talked a disconcerting amount of sense in the most annoying and patronising fashion, and William put on his incredibly annoying "I know better than you" voice to Ed and Emma. Remember, though, it was George who called them clowns. His parents, he called them clowns. In an attempt not to be evicted from Little Grange when he feels like staying there, he picked up his towel off the floor. Hardly counts as housework, according to every mother ever. Kate. Oh my word, I can hardly believe that I'm saying this. She was caring and sensitive to her loved ones. Oh, and she had a phone call with a couple of her kids on Mother's Day as well. She supported Jacob, who had to kiss and make up with Paul, and Alice, after she had a monumental tattoo with Chris, who blames her for getting involved with Harry. She took Alice and Brian to the races, even supplying clothes for Alice to wear, where Brian encountered Miranda. They talked about Jenny Darling's intimidating personality, which dissipated when Justin was being mean to Miranda. Or that must have brought Brian a lot of comfort. The hides went up on the wall of the tea room. Everybody hated them, and they came back down again. I don't think you can put in for a PayPal refund, Tony. Oh, well. Let's see what happens next week, then. Hope it's a good one.
Brilliant. Thank you for that, Sui. So, Stephen, are you still on the sofa bed?
I am still on the sofa bed, but I don't really want to talk about that.
What else have you been up to, then, this week?
As listeners to The Archers have probably realised, this week was the week of the Cheltenham Festival, the Gold Cup.
So is it chaos, chez vous?
It was during the week, the town springs a whole load of portaloos all over the place. All the bars and nightclubs start flying Irish flags, and town is full of people wearing strange suits that they clearly only wear once a year and trying to find the buses to the race course. All the pubs sell out of Guinness, even the ones which have special Guinness bars where you walk past them and there is just row after row of glasses full of Guinness so that people don't need to wait for it to be poured. They're all pre-poured and as they're being sold as fast as they're settling. So it's a busy time. It's not a time to plan to do anything in town, certainly not in the evenings, because everywhere is absolutely rammed and noisy and full of people having mostly a good time, but the weather has been pretty poor. I don't know where Brian managed to find any sunshine because Wednesday was pretty wet. Friday was absolutely chucking it down. On Wednesday, they had to cancel one of the races because that bit of the course was too wet. That was a cross-country...
All right, it sounds like you've had exactly the same kind of weather that we've had here then. Is the Cheltenham... I don't know anything about these horsey things, but it's very Irish, a lot of Irish horse...
A lot of Irish people come over, yes, Irish horses come over to compete, and I think the first couple of days, almost all the winners were Irish. One of the British stables, Nicky Henderson, had to pull out all his horses because they were running really badly, and it was clear that there was some sort of bug going around. And that took out some of the competitors against Willie Mullins, who's the big Irish trainer.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, how was your week?
My week was much better than the previous 2 weeks. I seem to have bounced back with energy after bug after bug after bug. Although I have to say, this morning I'm doing this with a weeping eye, so it looks like yet another bug has got me. But that's the problem when you mix mainly with old people in geriatric wards or in the hospital. So I'm looking forward to spreading my bugs around this evening because it's our town twinning committee. It's their big evening and we are twinned with the town in Galicia in northern Spain. So we have a paella evening complete with flamenco dancers, etc., etc. So it's all very Spanish. So I'm looking forward to going to that tonight with friends, English friends, in fact.
So. Just like Ambridge and Meruel so many years ago.
Exactly. So very, very current to Ambridge. I think that's more than enough about us. So let's get on to the important bit, which is you, our lovely caller in us.
Hello, Pusscat.
And first up, we have a call from Jen in Brooklyn.
Hi, everyone. This is Jen from Brooklyn calling in on a Sunday. Usually I call at midnight New York time, and look at me now. I'm sure everything I have to say will prove quite stale next Sunday, but I was triggered, I think, by World Book Day. I have cousins in England and Ireland who I love, of course, and I love their children, and they post these pictures of their kids with their forced smiles in their books. And I don't know if World Book Day, I'd call it a very commercialized, but certainly it's become this thing at schools where a lot of projects are fodder for social media for the parents. And it puts pressure on us to do things that I don't think are that helpful for our kids. And I put my kids on the internet, but I am ambivalent about it and more aware of it. And this just seems like one of those things. So we have it. We do something similar in the United States now, the story parades at Halloween, which I like. It's the same thing where kids dress as characters, and they, I think, supposed to help people who don't celebrate Halloween still have fun with costumes. Yeah. Okay. Chris and Harrison both grossing me out this week. Other people are talking about Harrison and Fallon's differences in finances, but I just don't think he's a proper partner with her. I don't think it's that they have different ideas of ambition or even money, but that she's made it clear how anxious she is about their financial well-being. And he's been, I think, maybe avoidant and not addressing his lost income, but also buying that super big dollhouse. That would piss me off because I'm sure that was expensive. I'm almost done with my 2 minutes, but sorry, I just want to say the obvious that Chris was weird when he called Alice my ex-wife. Like, he clearly thinks he still has some right to be controlling over her. People who like want them to get back together again, I think that's just nuts. There's a lot of good things about him. He's a full character. That's what's so great about the Archers. But the way he is with her recovery, I don't like it one bit. Anyway, sorry for going on so long. I really love this show. Bye.
Thank you, Jen, for that call. In fact, we had a bit of a pause from the Harrison future storyline this week. So your call hasn't gone stale at all. And I do agree with you that Chris was acting a bit weird. And I think I said last week, I thought he was going to blow up at Harry. But he's certainly going to blow up at somebody at some point soon. And it is going to be a bit messy. So I fully agree with your assessment of him. I'm not as anti-Harrison as you are, I think. I think Harrison's a really nice guy. It may well be that he isn't really pulling his weight in the relationship, and certainly not financially. But I think that's just because he's trying to be a caring partner for Fallon, and he's not really thinking in those terms. I think they're just very different people. We discussed last week, I think it was, about how the two of them complement each other. And when it comes to something like running a pub, the two sets of skills that they have would go quite well together. So I think that, yes, he's not pulling his weight, but maybe that's just not his role in the partnership.
Yeah, maybe not. But in fact, I completely agree with Jen over Harrison spending money on that doll's house. I think that was quite insensitive to the fact and over the top. It's not appropriate for a three-year-old. Is he a godfather?
I think he is a godfather, yes.
Yeah, but still, I think to buy a big present, an expensive present like that, without any reference to Fallon, and let's face it, in a lot of relationships, it's generally left to the woman to sort out presents and things. That's probably a very sexist comment on my part. Now, talking about a sexist attitude, maybe, talking about attitude, Chris really, really got on my nerves with how he spoke to Alice, how he treated her as though she really was still an ongoing problem for him.
Yes, definitely. He still hasn't really got to grips with handling her situation as a recovering alcoholic.
No, not at all. I felt that he was being proprietorial about her with no right to be proprietorial about her. Their relationship is all about Martha now, not about them. But we saw him when she was in the depths of her alcoholism and when she was trying to get into recovery, that he wasn't necessarily the most supportive. He was definitely blocky about it. And the one thing I wanted to take away from this week was his conversation with Emma after they'd been in the forge. Because Emma always says, oh, yes, Alice is fine now. She's no longer married to my brother. But she still makes those snidey remarks like, oh, you always give her the benefit of the doubt, which actually doesn't help Chris at all. And maybe that should make us think about our relationships and what we say with people when we're trying to be supportive of them. Because sometimes we've got our own agenda, and I think Emma has got her own agenda. So to bring her into that mix was an interesting move on the part of the writers.
Emma is very much family first, and I think that's Susan inculcating that into her.
Except for George. Let's talk about that later.
Yes, good point. Our next call is from Marie in Winchester.
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and all dum-de-dummers. It's Marie from Winchester. Had a very creative day today, amongst other things. And if you want to see my progress of my ferret, it's on the Facebook page. Anyway, I think it's been quite weird because I've just listened to the podcast, not quite all of it, but I thought I'd better call in. First of all, I've had exactly the same plot prediction as Stephen about Chris going absolutely mad at Harry. And then Harry changing his plea at the court and it all going completely wrong. So exactly, I was going to call in about it and then Stephen said about it and it was like, oh my God, it's exactly the same. Two minds is better than one. I'm hoping that happens, not for Harrison because he's lovely, but good story. The other thing was too, I was thinking just earlier on, I wonder if Isabel has turned 18 yet because I used to really enjoy her calls. Love the way she goes through the characters. And then she called in, which was just uncanny. So it was lovely to hear her back and look forward to more of her calls. And lastly, what is an abattoir vet? Did you go see abattoir? And then Vin said, this cow is too poorly to be slaughtered today. We better get the vet to have a look at him. And then the vet turns up. And what is that all about? Can someone answer my question? Because it is a mystery to me. And yeah, that's it from me. And have a good week, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Marie. Absolutely brilliant that you're working on ferrets. Really, really good. And yes, it was a very interesting and shaming for me photo that you put on the Facebook page. Anybody who's on the Facebook group can look at that. Look at Marie Bray. You will see the beautiful form of a ferret, whereas I've got deformed ferrets here. So I'm going to skip over the next two sections of what you talked about, Chris, and about Isabel, who we welcomed back last week. I want to talk about abattoir vets. You ask, what is it? Well, according to the BVA, which is the British Veterinary Association, the vet is called the OV, official veterinarian, and it is absolutely required by law that there is an OV on site, all abattoirs. There is a lovely link if you look up to a Liverpool vet practice called Simply Vets, and they have a description and an interview with an OV that describes the job. The person actually wanted to work with farm animals as it happened, and then they went into veterinary stuff. It's all about hygiene in terms of the future product and animal welfare during their time in the abattoir. And it talks about the fact that most animals now are delivered the night before they are about to be slaughtered, which is all part of the natural process of this farming and eating and processing of meat. And so they're less stressed as they go into the abattoir, and the vet makes sure that the conditions are hygienic and there is good welfare for the animals. Did you find that out as well, Stephen?
I did. And the vet that they interviewed became an official veterinarian because he established that he wasn't physically able to do the full range of large animal vet work. And when you remember some of the scenes we've had with cows giving birth and so forth, some fairly physical work needed in that sort of environment. Whereas with an OV, it's examining the animals to make sure they're healthy, but you're never actually going to be involved in anything like major operative stuff, because basically if the cow needs an operation, it probably won't turn up anyway. Mm. If it's a bit peaky, you don't need to do the physical stuff to establish that and send it back. And obviously it's highly unlikely that you'll ever have to have an animal giving birth in the course of your work as of an OV. So it's a type of veterinary activity that I guess if you're like Tony and you really believe that it's important to understand the full life cycle of farm animals that turn into meat on your plate, that it's something that you can believe in because it is an essential element of that food chain.
Yeah, and one of the things I found out during the research was that vets, the OV, can actually reject carcasses after they have been slaughtered. They inspect the carcasses as well. And then they take samples of various carcasses to test for ongoing disease or unsuitability for human consumption, etc. Yeah, I never thought I'd find it an interesting subject, but I did. So thank you very much, Marie, for asking that question.
Let's move on to our next call, which goes like this.
Y'all know how this goes.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
Greetings, Jacqueline, Stephen, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, again caller entering in between patients following Monday's episode. I have one thought about Alice et al. Today. I believe we can finally put an end to the speculation that Alice and Chris will get back together. Chris is just not right for her, and there has been too much water under that bridge. I hope they can continue to be good co-parents of Martha. Now, on to another one of our favorite post-divorce relationships, Will, Emma, and Ed, with a little bit of George thrown in. Let's talk about small businesses and business plans. I know them well in relation to my husband's business. He had a good plan. He and his business partner had great Scottish accents and raised a lot of money. The business did well for 15 years, was a critical success, but only broke even. And then the pandemic hit and it closed. I lost more than a good chunk of change, so I understand Will's concerns that he have confidence in the business, especially as George so inelegantly put it, their house would be at risk. Interestingly, at first I thought Will was going to be more of a silent partner, but he also sees the business as something to be handed down to George and the other half-siblings, but that's way down the road, and George doesn't seem that interested in it, though he could be a great digital marketer of the business. Was it realistic that Will could have reviewed a basic business plan in an hour or two and make comments? Not sure of Will's expertise in this area, but coincidentally, my husband was just hired as a business consultant and was asked to review a plan for a new private club and to write up notes. I acted as an assistant, as I'm a better writer than he is. We did it this past weekend in that amount of time without a problem. But is it a good idea for these once feuding brothers to go into business together? Probably not, but what cringy fun we will have listening to them. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that call, Witherspoon. And on that first point about Chris and Alice, I absolutely agree. I've never actually been one who thought that Alice and Chris would get back together, but I know a lot of people thought they should. And I think it's pretty clear from the exchanges now that that would be a really bad idea. And that even if circumstances threw them together again, it would not be the right answer for them to try and get back together again. I think that ship has well and truly sailed.
I agree with you. I agree with you both entirely. I've never been one who wanted that either. Yeah.
We've got another call later on about business planning, but I think that one thing that is deeply unclear about the proposed arrangements, and I think that it's probably consciously to the scriptwriters at least unclear, is what role Will is going to have. Because he's talked about putting some money into the business. I think Ed and Emma see it as a loan, which they will then pay off and walk away from. Will, I think, sees it as more of an equity stake in the business, that he will own some sort of share of the business. And he's talked about becoming a family thing that they can pass down to the next generation. I think that that would be disastrous. I don't even agree with Witherspoon that George could do good marketing. George's ambition is to be some sort of influencer, and the only thing that influencers really market is themselves. And I don't think that having George as the face of Ed and Emma's tree surgery would do any of them any good, except perhaps George for his own narrow, selfish little interests.
Yes, in fact, to go back to the final question from Witherspoon, which was, is this a good idea to go into business? I think on the face of it, in theory, it probably is, because William has some money he thinks that he can invest. But I don't think, as you say, they're not being clear about what position he's in. But add George to the mix. And George was downright rude to his mother and Ed this week. He made comments that really were totally inappropriate, both to their faces and then in private later to Will. So I think George is going to be the oil on the fire of breaking down that relationship. So,
yes, casting oil on fires rather than on troubled waters.
Exactly. Exactly the opposite of the troubled waters.
Well, we've got another view of George coming up later in the podcast. So let's save discussion of him, or at least save a bit of discussion of him until then. Meanwhile, we'll change subjects completely with our call from Claire.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here, calling in on Thursday evening where, oh my God, it's a return of the silverback. Like, I've got a bit of a sort of small pet theory that I've never quite managed to get anyone to work up into an academic Archers paper about masculinities in the Archers. And Justin and Brian were the old silverbacks. And I thought we were starting to see some just different versions of masculinities, like the way that kind of Harrison and Ben express themselves in the world and different sort of ways of being a decent person. Of course, this does not include George, who is awful and has been awful this week. And I cannot wait to someone to give him a bloody good slap. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. Do we think that Brian's going to get together with Justin's ex? I don't know. I mean, I can see it's a possibility. He clearly has gone back to his sort of Lothario feeling. Maybe it'll prompt Justin to try and get back with him and said, oh, I don't know. I could do without it all, quite frankly. I'd quite enjoyed the era in which Justin wore velour tracksuits and complained and bickered with Lillian about who was going to mow the lawn, COVID times, wasn't it? And I think Brian's been quite nice and calm recently, but I can do without their testosterone firing all over again and going back to their old ways. But let's see what happens, shall we? All right. Keep up the good work. Speak to you soon.
Thanks for that, Claire. Yeah, I've loved Brian recently. I felt that he's definitely turned a relationship corner with his children and with other people slightly since the death of Jenny Darling, because he now has taken on that role of being a confidant and a friend to both Kate and Alice, which comes across really, really well. And we've had some really interesting scenes with him where he's sparky, he's back on form. I think the next step is for him to think about maybe he could have another relationship. But Miranda, I think she'll eat him alive. I think she's so canny.
So I found this very interesting. It appears to me that Miranda is more into Brian than Brian is into Miranda, or at least every time he thinks he's into her, something comes along and it's usually family related, Alice in particular. And he seems to step away from that. And it's maybe seeing Alice and then thinking back to Jennifer and then looking at Miranda.
Yeah.
Now, Miranda has been lying through her teeth about the past. All these discussions with Jennifer, I think they only went round to Home Farm a couple of occasions in 2017, once for a small event with just the four of them, Justin and Miranda and Brian and Jennifer, and once for a big party where the mayor of Felpersham absolutely
lathered.
And it was Miranda who ended up taking her to the loo to throw up. And that was all quite a disastrous evening. Though that was when Jennifer was making her cornucopias, or
yes,
cornucopiae, as Jim corrected her.
All right.
So I'm wondering whether, if she's appearing to be so into Brian, is that because she really is? Or is she looking at an opportunity to stick the knife into Justin by demonstrating that she is still attractive to Brian?
Yeah, I agree. I think that could possibly be the case. But also, she probably doesn't know. She didn't know Jenny was dead. So she maybe doesn't know that he's no longer in possession of the Albion kitchen. So she sees him as a rich member of the landed gentry. So, and that's, she's still working. Now, what kind of age? These people that are still working well into their 70s and she's still doing consultancy stuff.
I'm not sure that Miranda didn't know about Jennifer dying because we only have her word for it.
So true.
Either she thinks Brian is more of a catch than he actually is and she's got her eyes on Home Farm and the Albion Kitchen, or she knows exactly what's going on and she was pretending to be shocked and upset and sympathetic to get closer into Brian.
Like with those anecdotes.
With all those anecdotes about the time spent in the kitchen. But as I said, as far as I remember, as far as I can tell, they only went round a couple of times. So it's all a bit bizarre. And it may be that Brian actually knows that she's overdoing it and is too polite to tell her to her face.
But didn't you love Justin when he said, when Brian told him that he'd bumped into Miranda, oh, I'm so sorry. I just love that laugh. It's so brilliant. And also, even if it doesn't come to anything and there's no possibility of it happening, I can't wait for the fallout from Kate and Alice if Brian gets together with Miranda.
Yes, that would be fun to see.
Exactly.
It might be serious enough to bring Debbie back.
Oh, that would be serious. So those are our first few calls. There are more to come and we'll hear them very soon. If you'd like to join in by calling us or dropping a line by message or email, Stephen is here to tell you how. And all the details are also in the show notes.
The first option is to record a message or a plot prediction by going to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum, and that's a T in the middle. The next option is to send us a voice note or a message via WhatsApp on 07810 012 881, and don't forget that it's +44 and remove the first zero if you're calling from outside the UK. Please keep your calls to a maximum of 2 minutes. And finally, we have an email address that you can contact us on if you would rather write to us with your views. It's a maximum of 250 words, please. And the email address is dumptydum@mail.com. And do bear in mind, you need to be at least 18 to contribute.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, shall we get back to our call? And it's a first-time caller in Ra.
It is. It's Helen.
Hello, it's Helen here. I'm a long-time listener, but a first-time caller in Ra. And as a person with a label, I wanted to respond to the call last week suggesting that we don't need labels and the characters from The Archers in particular don't need them. But what labels do is provide a way of getting help when something requires more of you than you can give, or to help recognise that you don't have the brain chemicals for a particular task. So in interviews, for example, you can ask for reasonable adjustments like not expecting eye contact or getting the questions in advance. And Brad might benefit from a label for a university interviews, for example. But often the getting of labels is down to the quantity and frequency with which the symptoms you're experiencing impact your life and whether your needs are in fact being met. I suspect Brad's needs are currently being met at the moment, shown by Emma pointing out that it was unfair to ask him to model at the fashion show. As for Jakob, the other one that we look at regularly, Well, he's not great at handling change with the idea of Alistair moving on. So if he had a label, that would signify that change needs to be handled very differently from the way it has been handled at the vets. But these characters don't have labels yet. And there have been some missed opportunities, actually, in the storylines to explore this. Getting diagnoses later in life is one that they could have looked at. Difficulty getting diagnosed is another. The length of wait for the diagnosis, which round here is about 5 years. Girls in particular as well are often missed, and we're good at masking. So if we look to be doing fine, then we must be fine. And there was an opportunity for Russ to spot ADHD in Chelsea when he was tutoring her and go into all of this, but that came to nothing. So now I'm going to finish by asking Stephen for a reasonable adjustment. So I've mitigated my own ADHD by practicing this to keep focus and avoid time blindness to hit 2 minutes. But if I haven't been successful...
And unfortunately, Helen just missed the two-minute thing. She got in touch. She's a friend of mine. And she got in touch to say all she was going to say was, could I edit it to make it make sense? But I don't think that call needed any editing apart from just explaining what those missing last couple of words were. Now, I've been somebody who has tended to criticise the desire for listeners to medicalise variations in people's characters over the years. But I think the way that Helen puts it is really very good. She talks about labels, and there's a massive difference between labeling somebody and pigeonholing somebody.
Yeah.
And the key things are, firstly, a label describes you, it doesn't define you. So if you have something like ADHD, then it is helpful for other people to know that your reactions might be somewhat different from what they might be used to. It doesn't mean that you're some sort of freak or need to be treated in some way as a very special case, but it's about relating to you and engaging with you properly. And the other thing about labels is, of course, that you can have more than one label. If you pigeonhole somebody, you can only put somebody into one pigeonhole at a time, but you can attach as many labels as you like for different purposes and different reasons. And it's not, or certainly shouldn't be seen as an embarrassment, a mark of shame or anything like that. It's a way of helping both sides of an engagement. If you're talking to somebody and they've got ADHD or something like that, if you both understand that, then you can have a much more fulfilling conversation because you're not looking for cues that they're not willing to give. You're not going to be so bothered when your own cues aren't picked up. Being a bit more explicit when you're talking to somebody with some neurodivergent conditions is absolutely fine. So I think that it's important not to turn everything into a medical condition. But it is very useful to be able to identify that there are factors that will help when you engage with them and will help you and them at the same time.
Yes, a very interesting call, Helen. Thank you for that. Of course, Helen mentioned Jakob and Brad. Now, this week we've had quite it's a while since we've heard from Brad, but of course he'll be busy getting ready for exams and things, won't he? He'll have had his mocks and then be studying. But Jakob has been quite a big character this week, and I felt that his actions and reactions to Paul, because he obviously was worried. We know from the beginning of the week that he was worried on Monday morning because he had to pass by the surgery and he was going to meet people, specifically Paul. And so Kate, now it's always been curious to me that Kate, with all her woo-woo ways, and Jakob with his set ways, let's put it like that, are together. And as she describes him as her life partner, which she misses in his understanding of him so much, but she hits with the understanding of him as well. And actually encouraged him to go and talk to Paul. I thought that some of those conversations were absolutely brilliant. And Jakob trying to meet him halfway by having chatting in inverted commas, as Jakob suggested, and then Paul winding him up and teasing him about social media or fandoms. I just really enjoyed that this week, and it brought out, it makes us think about, as Helen said, the labels, but also it makes us see the contrasts of the characters.
Yes, I have to say that if Kate were in a relationship with somebody who was a lot like Kate, it would be a complete nightmare.
Chaos.
Yes. So I think the two of them complement each other quite well. And
they're two extremes, Stephen, aren't they? We know a lot of couples in Ambridge and otherwise who are close enough to be complementary, but far enough away not to be such contrasts like Kate and Jakob.
But I think it's a feature of Kate that she is actually incredibly self-aware. And every so often she will make a remark which makes you realise that she knows exactly what she's like. She knows who she is.
Yeah.
And she doesn't mind other people thinking the sort of stuff that people think about her. And I think that's probably true in an obviously much quieter way about Jacob. So I think the fact that they both know themselves makes the relationship work.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kate, hasn't she had some star lines this week? I mean, right from Mothering Sunday and I can't be expected to eat my vegan meal next to the flayed pelt of a once sentient beast.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic writing. It almost took in my brain, that one. Very good. Very interesting. And I think we will have to, I think, as you say, difference between labels and pigeonholes. Very good point.
And I think we've got some discussion of Kate coming up from our next caller, who is Emma.
Hello. This is Emma calling from Poland. Hello to everyone around the world. It was nice to hear someone else is listening in Poland. I do sometimes wonder if anyone else is listening here. I feel very much like a stranger here, some of the time. And the Archers helped me to feel surrounded by a language and a culture I understand most of the time. What I haven't understood much this week is the relationship between Kate and Paul. I know it was a device to help clear the problem between Paul and Jacob, but would they really go to the Bull for an evening together? I'm not sure of their ages, but Kate seems of an older generation than Paul to me. And after Kate explaining Jacob to Paul and sounding like she understands him and how he is different from her, he has different ways of engaging with and enjoying the world. Would she really take Paul back to Jacob's house when she knows he's probably settled in for the night? My other thought about the Archers this week was that the writer seemed very interested in fashion. Kate and Alice described Alice's outfit in great detail to Brian. Alice was worried about her chignon and lipstick at the races. Apologies about my French pronunciation. My Polish pronunciation isn't much better. Miranda had to change from jeans and a denim shirt to a dress. Does she sound like a double denim person? Did Brian care what she was wearing before she got changed? And then Alice mentioned Brian's suit. Maybe the writer this week is a fashionista or was inspired by Oscar coverage. Anyway, goodbye for now. And thank you for this podcast, which helps me feel connected in the times when I feel very alien in a culture which is not mine.
Oh, thank you for that call, Emma. Coming from someone who's spent the last 20 years living in a country which is not her own, although I have become French in the last, nearly 10 years, I agree with you entirely. Having a podcast, and in fact, 10 years ago, I discovered Dumpty Dum on episode 2 or 3, went back to listen to 1 onwards. Obviously, I don't have any memory of what it was about. But listening to other people discussing a thing that I've listened to, and I'm listening to in a void, really, with no sounding boards. Many years ago, I used to be able to discuss it with work colleagues and my mum and stuff like that. But it does make you feel like you've still got a connection to what essentially is the motherland, although that might be a bit over-expressing it a bit. But yeah, so I understand why you feel like a stranger in another world and that Ambridge and Dumpty Dum help you to feel more connected to it. Now, Sarah here, we've had her in the past and I've looked back over my notes for the last few times that she wrote and I've always noted the food. So she always talked about food. And yes, I agree with you. She brought in the fashionista element this week, which although A Vision in Spring at Cheltenham on Wednesday, don't know about that. According to Stephen, the weather wasn't up to vision and springness. But yeah, I think she's definitely someone who has an element to her writing that brings in things that we talk about all the time. I'm going out to this paella evening this evening. I've already had a discussion with one of my friends about whether we're dressing up or down. It happens. It's the real world. And I think Sarah, as a writer, has got a really good handle on what, in general chit-chat, we talk about. So there we go. Kate and Paul, generation, but Kate doesn't think she's old.
Cheltenham doesn't have a ladies' day the way that some race meets do. Wednesday was style day.
Style day, yes. Style.
So it was entirely appropriate for Alice to dress up like that. I thought that was absolutely fine. Yes, Kate is 46 years old, though, as you say, she is a child of the universe and has no real age. I don't think we know officially how old Paul is, but I'm assuming mid to late 20s.
Yeah, I think we've decided that in the past, haven't we? Last week when we had a discussion about other children, we thought he might be the youngest of a few.
And given who he spends his time socialising with, he's socialising with the 20-somethings of Ambridge. So
yes, who's he sharing with? Just remind me, because I always forget these things.
Josh and Lily.
And Lily, that's right.
And yeah, Lily's early 20s, Josh is mid to late 20s. So I think they're in that sort of area. It wouldn't surprise me if he was the oldest of the three of them, not by very much. So yeah, it was a bit contrived, the extent to which Kate chummed up with Paul. I suppose it could have been that she was working really hard on both sides of the Paul-Jacob dispute. It did seem implausible, and I think we may have a comment about that coming up, that she would bring Paul back.
Yeah.
If it had been back to her place, where Jacob was, it would be one thing. Bringing her around to Jacob's place, where we know that he is very much a sort of go inside, shut the door.
He'd already said to Paul, hadn't he? A good book and drink at home, thank you.
Yes. It's interesting. That's a very Scandinavian feature of Jacob, the lack of small talk and the sort of living a private life and so forth. Even though we don't think Jacob spent much time in Sweden, I think he moved to the UK when he was very young. He has some very Swedish characteristics.
In fact, I always think of him as being more like Norwegian friends, because I was brought up in Immingham in the 70s when the building up of oil refineries and oil production was really, really taking place. We had a direct ferry from Gothenburg to Immingham. And a lot of people in my class at school, when I was in the second year at senior school, there were at least five people whose parents were Norwegian. And so I obviously had friends. And if you went to the house, especially the Iverson family, was particularly funny because the mother was a very bubbly mummy who did all the cooking and the biscuits and all the rest of it. And the father was a very single word reply person. And one of the brothers, was exactly the same. They didn't do small talk. You'd walk in and you'd be sitting there and waiting while Mrs. Iverson faffed around, and the boys didn't make conversation, whereas their daughter, who was my friend, was much more like me.
Time for our final call, I think, and this one is not from Poland, where Richard has been in the past, but I think from Lisbon.
Hello, Richard calling in from sunny Lisbon. There are so many things wrong with the business entrepreneurship scene in Ambridge, I don't know where to start. I'm obviously thinking about the tree surgery business, Emma and Ed. Where do I start? Of course, it's a good idea to get advice from experienced business people such as Justin or Brian. But why at the last minute only to persuade your somewhat hapless brother-in-law, brother, or whatever Will is to them to fork up? Yeah, sensible of Will, but if he's treating it like a business, you wouldn't loan in these circumstances. He'd want to have some kind of equity stake or shareholding. So he's migrated from friendly, one of the three S's, family, friends or fools who finance business, through to someone who's treating like a business. Justin, not so many months ago, was in for Angel Investor of the Year. Any angel in the circumstances, the circles I live in, who expected a fee for mentoring people at the beginning of their journey would be struck off. It's ridiculous and outrageous. Of course, there are people out like Justin out there, but they don't go in for awards unless they're delusional. If you spend 10 minutes or 5 minutes on ChatGPT or Google Bard straight Gemini, you can come up with a decent business plan. But anyone I know in the world of business would tell you it's not the plan that matters, it's how you put it into action. So I'm afraid that the good citizens of Ambridge are not doing the best in enterprise education. Even George seems smart.
I agree with a lot of what you say, Richard. Thank you for that call. It does all seem a bit chaotic in terms of setting up the business. I mentioned earlier that it wasn't clear whether Will was going to be an equity investor or was lending them money. Certainly the original expectation from Ed and Emma was for a loan, and Will certainly seems to be talking about taking a stake in the business. He very much sees it as a business that would be owned by Ed, Emma and Will and passed on accordingly. So it's all totally chaotic. And neither Brian nor Justin seems to have pointed that out or have asked what role Will sees himself playing in the business. I think this is all showing that it's going to go horribly wrong. And Richard says, it's not the plan, it's how you deliver the plan that matters. And Emma sees this as a Grundy business that will finally succeed. A business plan won't turn it into a business that will succeed if it's still a Grundy business. And look at Bridge Farm. If you want business plans, Bridge Farm have plans coming out their ears all the time, and yet they're just an organic farm, and it doesn't seem to make much difference. So I wonder how this will turn out. I fear it won't turn out well. I'd like to be proved wrong. I think it would be good for Emma to have some success, but at the moment, I don't think they're setting themselves up for success.
I know. I suspect you're both right, but Emma is so determined. She wants it to be... She wants to be positive. As I say, I have mixed feelings about Emma, but she is the one who eggs on bad things from the gossipy side from her mum. But she's also the one who is determined. She's the one who created the vision of the mountain and taking your sandwiches up the mountain, didn't she, a few weeks ago? And when Ed was completely battered down by Will and his scribbles on their business plan, she was one who I said, right, let's look at this step by step. She reins Ed in from his misery to get him back online. I think the flaw in the ointment is going to be George. And in the last episode, on Friday night's episode, we heard her say, yeah, I think George is going to be key. I think that's all of our calls for this week. Thank you very much for calling in. We do love hearing from you all. I love the fact that everybody's viewpoint of different aspects is brilliant and different, and it makes us talk to each other. So don't forget to call in next week. Did we receive an email or any WhatsApp messages this week, Stephen?
Yes, we had an email with the title George and Paul but hold the John and Ringo, and it is of course from Chris, and it goes like this. Greetings, Stephen, Jacqueline and all Dumpty Dumland. In the past I've complained about so many characters. I actually stated that I loathed Jacob. I've said horrible things about Harrison, Tony, and probably Helen. To add to the controversy, let me state that I love George Grundy. Loving George is like being friends with that one kid in the class no one else likes, and I adore him. I cannot overestimate how thrilled I was to hear him on Sunday. Angus Stobie is such a tremendous actor, and I feel defensive of that character, the way some people feel about Helen. George gets a lot of hate. But to me, he seems like one of the most realistic characters. He's sharp-tongued and jerky, like many teenagers who find themselves compensating for what embarrasses him. And being a Grundy in a small town with an uncle for a stepfather, there's plenty to be embarrassed about. I also loved Paul's moment of self-reflection with Kate this week, where he wondered if maybe he did need to calm down and grow up a bit. As a gay man, so often in your youth you are maligned for being too this or too that, and there is a time when you have to sort out the criticism. Which complaints have weight and which complaints are merely homophobic or simply irrelevant? What is being out and proud and what is a failure to read the room? This is a real part of gay growing up, and I was glad to see Paul facing it. Until next week, Chris in Indiana.
Chris, I found that fascinating that you love George Grundy and I dislike intensely George Grundy. So we're obviously not looking at him in the same way at all. I think the thing I don't like about George Grundy is the fact that he shows no respect whatsoever for his family. He is out to get stuff for him and to do things for him. And I found it fascinating, the conversation with him and Will this week, where Will had to make him take his headphones off or his earbuds out of his ears to have the conversation, following how rude he was to Ed and Emma in front of Will in their house. But also, George, there's a question, because I have a vague memory that when William came into money all those years ago, when he bought the house where they're now living, didn't he put money aside for George as an adult? Am I misremembering that?
I'm trying to remember whether that was before or after George was even born.
Right.
I think it might have been before George was born, perhaps.
I know. I don't know. We'll have to do a bit of research on that one, Stephen. Yes, he's only a teenager, but he's now late teens, isn't he? He's 19, coming up to 20.
Yes.
Yeah. So he should be growing out of that jerky, sharp-tongued teenage reaction to things. But I think he's got it set in his mind that he is going to be better than all of those people and better than the Grundys. And he's going to do it with absolutely no effort whatsoever on his part. He's certainly, mind you, having said that, now I feel mean because he actually was working very well with Tony, wasn't he?
I was just going to say there's been a lot of discussion on social media about George showing a nicer side of himself because of what he was doing at Bridge Farm, the work he was putting in, helping out with their events and doing the QR codes and things like that that didn't really work. But I was actually quite pleased and relieved to see that he isn't that sort of potentially nice guy. He is irredeemably awful. And I can sort of understand where Chris is coming from in terms of loving him. I'm on record as being a big fan of Kate. And yeah, most people can't stand her. But as I said earlier, Kate has big redeeming feature is her self-awareness. George has absolutely no self-awareness whatsoever. He is just totally solipsistic. He is just in his own world. And
indeed,
we will, I hope, see that result in failure. But it could be that it will result in him somehow becoming a success in all the ways make people loathe that sort of success.
Yeah. And I think as for me as a mum, you want to look at your children and children around you and hope that they're going to be a success. I'm sure the people in the world, dads and people without children, want to think that as well. But George is one that I really struggled to think positively and positively for. So there we are. Well, thank you again for that wonderful correspondent, Chris. I think you really need to get over here and get to one of our meetups and talk to us in face. So, now, before we move on to our Facebook group, I have to say something about Patreon. Now, those of you who are patrons of Dumpty Dum should have received your second newsletter this week, which has also gone out, finally, to our PayPal subscribers, all four of you. At this stage, it's something of a pilot. We plan to publish it weekly, and initially, we'll be sharing it to the Facebook group after a few days. But this is the first step towards coming up with a proper offering to those of you who are willing to support Dumpty Dum financially. If you have ideas for additional things that you would like to see in the Dumpty Dum newsletter, let us know either via Patreon or in the Facebook group or on our email. We are grateful to those of you who are already patrons. And as soon as we found our feet, we plan to offer you ad-free podcasts. And we have a number of ideas for additional bonus contents for patrons. So watch this space. Let's move on to Facebook, where we have lots of very busy, very friendly, thoughtful and thought-provoking members, and we need to give a very, very, very warm welcome to the newest of you who are
Noel Fursman, Mark Ierson, Amanda Lee, Kim Anderson, Joy Chambers, Amanda Driver, Rachel Howey, Barbara Lockhart,
Carol MacDonald, Dee Radford, Sarah Seeger, Carolyn Jones, Maureen Dodd, Nicola Boyle, Abby Ziviani, and Jackie Baker. Welcome to all 16 of you. Now, I didn't admit at least six other people because they didn't answer those three simple questions. You just need to do it, folks, and then you can join us.
So let's hear what our Facebook group has actually been talking about this week from Michelle, who is making her debut as a rounder-upper.
How am you, Dumpty Dummers? Michelle here. Having fled the Wolverhampton Mafia in my youth, I'm now ensconced in East Anglia and can therefore safely bring you this week's Facebook Roundup. The week started with Chris Gibson in shock at Kate as she uncharacteristically was making all sorts of sense for a change. Her vocal distaste for the new decor in the tea rooms was applauded by many. However, the conversation took an unappetising direction. Barbara Hopkins wondered if the cowhides were against food hygiene regulations, and Wendy Rowcroft hoped that the whole lot develop a flea infestation and ponged the place out. Yummy. Predicting Fallon's escape from unsanitary working conditions is T. Brown Artivist CA, who posted, "Now I'm sure Fallon and Harrison are going to take over the pub. She will make the Bull famous for their vegan pub food options, like the No Bull Burger. Came up with that one myself, and put Nakasha and Sausage Boy out of business." Glenys Goodwill responded, "And no remains of dead cows on the walls, a USP? Here's hoping, hey?" Moving outside of the tea room, and outside of Ambridge in fact, a few Dumpty Dummers spotted a fair few characters in the wild. Jim was spotted by Nicholas Nitua in a detective series called A Walk in the Dark, which features Clary Love in episode 3. Meanwhile, Paul Newman spotted Helen acting up a storm as a Cypriot policewoman in Love Rat. They do get everywhere. Talking of getting everywhere, there's been much merriment over Brian, with Susan Delamere suggesting that he's back on form. While Steve Beach agreed that there's life in the old dog yet, the use of numerous green-faced emojis by Ray Milner to Miranda's advances on Thursday night suggests not everyone's looking forward to seeing this play out. Anne Cowan surmised, Brian is 80 and still has some life in him. How old is Miranda? And does she sound as if there's no drive left? I think not. Watch this fascinating space. That's it from me this month. I'm off to invest in a tree business set up by the Grundys. It's got smart targets and a familial love triangle-based financing scheme. What could possibly go wrong, hey? Ta-ra with it!
Oh, that is brilliant. Thank you, Michelle. And thanks for everybody on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. Now, I think we received a review this week, didn't we?
We did. We had one from Bull848 on Apple Podcasts. And it has the title, Better Than the Sunday Omnibus. 5 stars. I've been listening to The Archers since the 80s and to this podcast just a few months, but it is my new favourite Sunday omnibus. So enjoyable to hear the intelligent and witty thoughts and predictions from other listeners, beautifully curated by Stephen and Jacqueline. I've been surprised to find I've been as invested in the progress of Stephen's new kitchen as I was in Jennifer's a few years back. It has enhanced my enjoyment of The Archers show, and I now look forward to this podcast every Sunday. Definitely recommend if you're a regular listener to The Archers. So thank you, Bull848, who is from Britain.
Oh, that is brilliant. And it really, really helps us when we receive these reviews, especially 5-star reviews. So thank you. Thank you for that. Very kind words. And yes, I think we've all been invested in Stephen's kitchen. I'm just waiting for the biscuits to be delivered to my house now. So we better move on to Twitter, where you'll find us at DumptyDum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A so the visually impaired who use screen readers can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. As well as at Dumpty Dum, I can be found at Jberto Sanguen.
And I can be found at Wenlock House. But we're both spending more time discussing the Archers on Blue Sky, where I am at wenlock.bsky.social.
And I am at jberto.bsky.social. So let's find out who's won the Twitter medals this week.
Tweet, tweet, Tiger.
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with Tweets and Skeets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to Bernadette, Jen, and everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week on Twitter and Blue Sky, it seems everyone has been enjoying the surprise return of the former Mrs. Elliot. As Fintan the Wrong at fintantwrong.bsky.social said, this left field storyline has instantly become my favourite. Alongside assertions that Jenny would never have spoken like that about Justin, there was a lot of speculation about whether Miranda knows that Brian no longer has the Albion kitchen. If she didn't know about Jenny dying, maybe she missed the Aldridge's relocation and thinks he still has that big house that now needs a chatelaine. Now, before this week's medals for Blue Sky Skeets and X Posts, all of which we continue to consider as Tweets of the Week, I want to give a special shout out to Miranda, no, not that one, at Apple Android App on the Twitters, who had so many laugh out loud posts this week that I could have given her all the medals. That holiday obviously worked wonders, Miranda. But now to the medalists, all of whom are posting short and sweet bon mot about that storyline. In bronze position, it's Little Kim, at Little Kim. Being nice about the dead wife, senior dating 101. The silver medalist is Steve Brooks at stevebrooks.bsky.social. That was posh woman for Brian, take me now. And the gold medal goes to the aforementioned Miranda at Apple Android App. Get your cravat, Brian, you've pulled. And on that note, that's it for this week. I hope to see you all on hashtag The Archers on Twitter or Blue Sky next week.
Thank you very much for that, Theo, and congratulations to all who mentioned in this week's roundup. Stephen, I can't help laughing out loud. I'm sorry when I listen to those because I don't hear these until we're actually recording. And they're a great surprise, but a great set of tweets this week. Thank you all.
And it's interesting that the tweets all focused on that Brian-Miranda relationship, whereas pretty much nobody mentioned that during the calls.
The calls, they're very interesting. I think it's a different set of people. But very good, very amusing. I think Twitter is one of those, and Blue Sky are both those surfaces where people can let rip because it's kind of anonymous.
And ephemeral.
And ephemeral, exactly. And don't forget, we're also on Instagram. Now, we're still looking for somebody who can help Theo out with that. So if you're interested and you're familiar with the Instagram setup, please let us know.
Next week, we'll once again be recording at the normal time of first thing Saturday morning. So please get your calls and emails in by midnight on Friday, UK time. And as we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thanks to all our wonderful contributors and to the whole team who look after our social media and support us in so many invaluable ways. Thank you to you lot too. This lovely Dumpty Dump community is why we carry on doing this every week.
And we must say thank you to Kim Durham and Sonny Ormond for their voices and our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown.
Thank you so much for listening and joining us today. We're now off to reminisce about imaginary hearts to hearts over another glass of wine in Jennifer's kitchen. It's goodbye from me.
And it's au revoir from me. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, dilly, dum. Dumpty, dilly, dumpty, dilly, dumpty, dilly, dum. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, dilly, dum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.